Hi, HR Nation, it's Chris Rainey. Welcome to HR Leaders, the show where we interview today's most successful and innovative HR practitioners 5 days a week. Today, we're joined by Henry Toledo, Chief People Officer at Valet Living. Henry, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm well, Chris. Thank you for the opportunity. First of all, congratulations to you. This is, what'd you say, episode 150?
Something along those lines. I think I've lost count by now. We're getting there. We're not quite 150, but we're there soon. We'll be there soon. Well, to be honest, it's been a year and a half, so we're doing well.
It's amazing. I remember when I first joined Valet Living a couple of years ago, you were really getting started. You had your first podcast. And then also congratulations on your baby.
Oh, thank you very much.
Although you're not getting a lot of sleep these days, I'm sure.
No, and those first few podcasts were recorded in the gaming room at home before I even had an office, and that is now the baby room. So nice. Definitely things have shifted quite dramatically since the beginning as well.
Yes, I know how that is.
So look, Henry, thanks so much for coming on. Before we jump into the podcast, tell our leaders a little bit about yourself personally and your journey to where we are today.
Yeah, so I've been in HR for now 25 years, and I always tell the story that I've known I wanted to be in HR since I was a little kid. You know, some kids want to play baseball, be, you know, doctors, I guess. I wanted to be in HR, and there's a whole story behind that, which I won't bore you with it, but sometimes things that happen in your life in your childhood, point you in one direction or another. So I got my degree in HR and have worked in HR for the last 25 years in every function in HR. And I love it. I love what I do.
Please tell us a bit more about that, because it's very, very, very rare that I have anyone on the show that planned to be in HR. I think everyone listening, all of you probably the same. I've done over 100 plus of these episodes, and maybe two people, three, planned on being in HR. So how did that happen?
So I'll give you the brief story. So I grew up in Spanish Harlem in New York City. And around the time I was 4 years old, first of all, my parents are Peruvian. So they met in the late 60s in New York City. And due to family circumstances, my dad went away and left and went to South America. And so my mom, who had very little education, had to figure out a way to support me. And so she knew that there was a job opening because my dad was a truck driver at a furniture store at Feinman Furniture in Harlem. And so she took myself, I was four, maybe five, went down to see Mr. Feinman and said, "Hey, listen, I got to feed my son. I got to find a way to support our family, and give me an opportunity to drive this truck." And so Mr. Feinman was kind enough to give her that opportunity, and she drove a truck for many years through Harlem, through the South Bronx, through Queens, through all parts of the boroughs. And I'll never forget that. I always remember her, sitting on a number of yellow pages, which we have here in the States. Which
we have them. We used to have them.
Yeah. So she's barely 5 foot tall, and so she drove a truck. And I remember, like a lot of parents, her reminding me, "Hey, we're having dinner. You're eating because Mr. Feinman gave me an opportunity to work. Hey, I'm able to buy you clothes or take you to the doctors because you have benefits, right? We have benefits to do that." So I was always reminded of that. I didn't know what HR was, but as I grew older, I understood the impact. I was able to go to high school and college. It made an impact on me. So when I finally learned what HR was in college, I said, "Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to impact people's lives." And so it's been 25 wonderful years.
What an amazing story. I'm so glad that you shared that with us, because it's very important, I think. And the fact that those experiences when you were young, your child, kind of that connection was made between, you didn't know it was HR at the time, but you knew but you made that connection later on. So that's really cool. So thanks so much for sharing that.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit more about the organization for people that aren't aware of the business.
Well, first of all, let me start by saying Valet Living is going to be one of the next great companies that you'll know of. Definitely, we always say next great American company, that's for certain, but we're very proud of the company and what we've done. So I'll give you an idea. So when I joined in early 2017, which is just 2 years ago, we had about 4,000 associates. Now we have over 6,000 associates, and we're going to have 15,000 associates nationally in the next couple of years. And so what we do, if you think about it, you know, Chris, is we do the one thing that maybe no one else can do, which is we give almost a day a year back into people's time, right? So if you think about what we do, is we provide high-end amenity services to the multifamily industry. So we have apartment communities all over the country where we're picking up recycling, we're picking up their waste right from their door. We're walking their dogs. We're cleaning their homes. We're providing yoga classes. We are picking up their dry cleaning. We provide this complete high-end amenity services to over almost 1.3 million homes and growing. So if you do the math, I was doing that this morning, actually, it's about a day a year. Right? So that's 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day where someone can focus on helping their child with their homework or, watching a show or just having a good conversation where we give our home valets and our service valets do tremendous work all over the country every day, every year. So we're really excited about what we do.
Amazing. And with that, in the type of business that you're in, you must be hiring rapidly.
All the time. We'll hire
constantly.
We'll probably hire 30, yeah. 40 people today. We've probably already hired 10 people this morning, and it's only 10 o'clock Eastern time.
Wow. Could you share more about what that system looks like then for other, because obviously that's unique to your industry, right? Obviously where you are.
It is unique. And a lot of our home valets and service valets that work for us, have other jobs as well. Some of them are teachers, some of them are stay-at-home dads or realtors and warehouse workers. They do a variety of things. So this is kind of a part-time job for many of them. And so we have to work fast. So our COO, Mike Jacobs, came to us about a year ago and he said, "Hey, I know we're hiring in about 14 days. Can we do 3 days?" Right. And I laughed. I almost fell out of my chair.
Yeah. That's and what I was thinking as well. I'm like, how do you screen and, go through all that many people and then that quickly?
Yeah. So we're almost at that 3 days. We're at about 4 days now. So it takes about 4 days, 4.5 days from the time someone expresses an interest and applies to the time they're ready to start. And so we move very quickly. So our recruiting team's done a great job of eliminating waste in the process, in streamlining our technology, in just moving quickly and communicating. So we move very, very fast. And of course, we have other positions in sales and in corporate functions and management functions where obviously it's going to take us 40, 45 days, 60 days.
Yeah. Are you covering the whole of the US at the moment or a particular area?
Like I said, we have 6,000 associates. We're going to have 15,000, 20,000 here in very, very short order. The growth is tremendous. And we have an executive team and a management team that is so passionate about growth and about doing it the right way, retaining this wonderful culture that we have, which we'll talk more about. Mm-hmm. But it's really a neat place. Like I said, we feel strongly we're going to be one of the next great companies.
I'm not surprised because, we're seeing all of these new emerging apps that are offering solutions, and really what they're solving and what they're giving you back is time at the end of the day. I think more and more now services like yours are going to become the norm and very popular amongst people that gives that quality time to them back as well. And again, it's not a case of them being lazy. It's a case of them wanting to spend that time. Is this time better served doing this task versus that one?
Well, you're exactly right. Like, I mean, you think about Robin, right? I mean, you're working 10, 12 hours a day. Mm. And 15 minutes here, 5 minutes here, that's precious, yeah. Right? And as Robin grows, you need that time. So,
do you know what's funny? And I'm admitting this on the podcast, but we live in a penthouse, right? And sometimes, because we're so busy with work and Robin, I'll come outside my front door and there's like multiple bags of rubbish that hasn't been taken down. Right, so this is like an exact example of what you mentioned. And it's not because I haven't really want to do it, because I'm like rushing to work. Obviously, my wife's busy with the baby. And I'm like, if I had someone just to do that one task, that would, it would just take it off my mind. I don't have to do it.
And the funny thing to your point is once you have the service or any of our services, it's hard to go back.
You're transforming the company so quickly. It's growing rapidly. And I think the main question I'd love to discuss with you is, what is the role of HR in that business transformation?
And I always joke, and it's really not a joke, but I say 90% of what I do as a CPO has nothing to do with HR. None of it. And yet everything has to do with people, everything we do. And so I would say the first really duty that I have is to be an advisor to Sean, our CEO, and our executive team. That's my number one goal, right? And so the only way I can do that is to understand the business, right? And poke my nose into everything that's happening and kind of understand it better than anyone, right? And so I would say that's the first role in the CPO, and anyone in HR is really get to know the business. Second thing is spending time with our clients, right? Like, so last week I was in Denver, Colorado, and I had a chance to meet with our clients and our residents. And that's very important, you know, simply, and Dr. Ulrich talks about it all the time, right? When you think about a outside in approach to HR, is asking our clients the question, how can we best serve you? Like, what does a good performance review look like? How do we best, you know, infuse talent? How do we best, you know, lead our organization? And so we ask our clients those questions and we get to know what they do and how we can best support them. So I think that's the role of HR, being an advisor, understanding the business. And I think the third thing is we have to, I don't know if you'll appreciate this, probably not the best analogy, but, you know, back in the 80s, you know, every rap group had like a hype man, right?
Yeah.
And I think about one particular, that's kind of the role of HR, right? Like you have to be the one, you know, and then with, you know, whether it's a podcast, whether it's, you know, social media, mm-hmm. whether you're out in the field, you've got to be the one championing all the great work that we do out in the field. And so if mm-hmm. you're sitting back and, you know, in your corporate office and you're and just, you know, trying to make decisions and policies in a vacuum, that's so passe. So I think those are the three things that come to mind.
Just going back for 1 second, because I know it's quite an interesting story. How did it come to be, this connection? Because you seem to have a very unique connection. We spoke before the show, you're CEO. How did this role come up and why did you take the opportunity?
Well, first of all, I worked for some very large companies and I enjoyed it very much. I worked for some small companies as well. But I think there were three reasons that I joined. And I would, my advice to anyone thinking about finding the right role, it worked for me. So here's the first thing. First of all is, who are you going to report to, right? And what is that executive team like? And so when I met with Sean, it was a bi-directional interview, right? I was trying to get a sense of who Sean was and the type of culture he was looking to create and had created. And so right away that, you know, he checked the box, right? I knew this was a leader that cared about people. And I didn't have to convince Sean on the value that people play in the success of an organization. So that was the first thing. The second thing is a turnaround. I always take, you know, turnaround situations. It just doesn't make any sense. If you think about Watkins in his first 90-day book, he talks about the STAR model. Turnaround is one of them. So it has to be a turnaround situation where I have an opportunity to make some changes. We, as an organization, make changes in the structure and how we do things and in our approach, our philosophy. So that was the second thing. The role of HR was not what it should have been. And so that was a great opportunity for me. And third, growth, right? Like no one likes to have their organizations grow by 5%, 7%. Yeah. Look at you. I mean, look at what you've done, right? And so when I heard we were growing by 25, 30%, I was like, okay, CEO, executive team, check. You know, the role of HR, check. Turnaround situation, check. Growth, check. So that allowed us to make the right decision. And it's been better than I ever imagined it now that we're going into year three of our transformation.
So when you first joined them, what did the first sort of few months look like? What was your main priorities? Mm-hmm. I think for our other leaders that are going to be taking on new roles, what are some of the things that you put in place or kept front of mind in the first few months in the organization?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Watkins book. So I've read it, I don't know, 5 times. And, you know, it depends on the situation. So in a turnaround situation, you have to move quickly, right? You've got to establish who you want to be, right? And so we said, okay, here's who we are today, and here's where we want to be. Now, before I got there, I went on a listening tour. So what I mean by that is spending a lot of time in the field, talking to our sales leader, our operations leaders, our service valets, clearly the executive team and the HR team. So, and I asked the same questions over and over until I could build some sort of hypotheses around
what questions you asking?
Really basic questions. Like one of the questions is, you know, what are some of the opportunities that we have as an HR function? And how can we better provide value to the organization? You know, what are some of the deficiencies in our organization? What are some of the unexploited opportunities? You know, again, these come out of the Watkins book, right? And then the other question was, what would you do if you were me, right? What would you focus
on? Love
that
one.
Yeah. You know, and that's such an easy question. And so those are good, similar interview questions. But, you know, so I had 50 pages of notes, right? Mm-hmm. And then I would start to move things around. And, you know, and once I would hear the same themes, I knew I was onto something, right? If from a 360 perspective of HR and the business and sales and Sean and the team were saying the same thing, I knew I was on the right track. And then so at about 45 days, I shared with the executive team and the board, here's what I'm learning. Here's what I'm seeing. What do you think? And so once I was able to get consensus, I said, okay, if this is what is current state, I think this is where we need to go. And so it came from a place of listening. It came from a place of observation and with a lot of substance. So
how far away was the feedback from the people on the front line versus the executive team? Just out of curiosity.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024. And the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
You know, it was actually pretty similar. The executive team that we have is very connected with our field. And so there was not that much of a gap. I think the how was different.
Right? Okay.
So the what may be similar, but the how might have been different in how we deploy, what's a priority, what's not. Mm-hmm. But again, it was what I loved about that whole first 90-day process was, you know, getting that input, which I didn't come up with, right? And then trying to make a recommendation on where we go next and breaking it up into digestible chunks. So the first phase that we had was stabilization. We just wanted to stabilize the HR function and how we did things. Next phase was really starting to realign and starting to make some changes, very fundamental changes, like our comp mm-hmm. processes, our recruiting processes, you know, looking at how we manage talent. And then we moved to the what we call the value add stage. That was fun. When mm-hmm. we went into year two, it's really now driving the business. So, you know, laying out a journey that was, you know, reasonable, right, but aggressive, I think was really important. So, no, the mm-hmm. support from the executive team's been tremendous. They're our biggest fans in HR.
Yeah. Well, they have to be, because without the people, nothing works. So, and it's good that you have a CEO that understands that as well. Yeah. And we're speaking before the show, not every business has that luxury of having a CEO that is people first. So where you are now, then, you kind of spent your first year building foundations of the organization. The second year, as you mentioned, was exploring sort of new avenues, new opportunities. What where's the next big opportunity for you and the team, do you think, in the organization?
Yeah, we're in the middle of it. So we've done quite a number of things. We've created a Valet U, if you will, which is kind of like a university where you have a master's program and a bachelor's program. You have online programs. And so our head of learning talent performance is doing a beautiful job of kind of building that. But it's not building it in vacuum. It's actually working with our partners and our associates to understand what makes sense. We've completely redesigned performance. We've left the early 1900s and the way many performance organizations manage performance, and we're current now, and it's we just completed the first year. 2018 was the first year where we completely redesigned performance, and now we're seeing the rewards of it, and it's a lot of fun.
I'm glad you said that, because that's what I was going to ask next, is how do you engage and I'll keep those, you know, how many executives do you have again? Sorry, associates, apologies.
Associates. Yeah, no, now we're going on probably about 6,200.
Yeah. How do you keep them engaged and connect with them and communicate with them on scale all over the US? How are you managing that?
Very difficult. It's very difficult in a dispersed workforce, right? We're lucky we have a wonderful social media platform where we can engage, have videos, have content that's interesting. You know, our biggest challenge is our associates, you know, many of them have full-time jobs, right? So this is you know, they work 12, 15 hours, some of them in the evening, during the day. And so that's very challenging. But, you know, using technology, tremendous amount. Mm-hmm. We use text as well. We use text to try to engage with our associates as best we can. Mm-hmm. But it's not easy. We haven't cracked that nut, Chris.
What platform are you using?
So we use Workplace.
Okay.
By Facebook. And
everyone's used to it. You don't have to train them.
You know, the thing that, and I've talked to a couple of CEOs and CHROs who are looking at Workplace, and the biggest fear is, oh no, you know, we're going to expose our entire organization, and what are they going to post, and who's going to manage it? And that's kind of the wrong approach.
It's the opposite of what you should be thinking.
Yeah, Sean's like, okay, I mean, that's
great. Yeah.
We want it to be unfiltered, right? And yeah, mm-hmm. sometimes you see things that, you know, people get into bits and so forth. But honestly, I can only think of in the last 2 years, maybe 4 instances where we had to step in. Mm-hmm. It's really not that big a deal.
It's probably more face-to-face than happens online in that sense.
It really is. And we were talking about podcasts. So it's not as well done as this, but we try to facilitate a podcast with Sean, our CEO. It's called This Is Living Podcast. It's more audio than anything, mm-hmm. but we're incorporating video very soon. And so Sean gets to talk to all of our associates.
Why did you start that for everyone listening? Because I've been encouraging. Everyone listening knows I bang on about it. I say everyone should have a HR. A podcast, not even a HR, a business podcast that they can use as a communication tool to connect and with the business, right, as well. And I know it's incredible platform to have. Why did you start it?
I think I was just listening. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts. Sean is a podcast junkie, comedy podcast, story podcast. And so one day we were just talking and we were comparing podcasts and he's like, hey, why don't we just do a podcast? I was like, okay. And so we, we're on episode, 12 or whatever, mm-hmm. It's funny. When I was in Denver, I had a couple associates. We were talking about communication and they feel like they know Sean as a friend, as a best friend, because he talks about life. He talks about his worries.
He's real. He's not just the CEO, right?
He's so real. And he just talks about his worries about the business, what he's excited about. He'll talk about some things personally.
It's so refreshing.
And it's so funny. They all think they're very, mm-hmm. very connected, and which is great because they are connected and he's very connected. So mm-hmm. honestly, it's low effort, high impact item. I don't know why we don't all do
and,
it.
And it doesn't cost a lot of money, right? It's like a
nothing. Sensitive one. It doesn't
people
cost anything.
Millions of pounds on these, communication programs and tools and all sorts of crazy and weird and wonderful things. I'm like, start a podcast. Well, look, moving on. I think one of the things that I was really keen to discuss with you is, your advice that you would give to other HR professionals that are wanting to become a chief people officer, CHRO, you've worked in many organizations, different industries, you've got a lot of experience. What advice would you give to leaders that are aspiring to sort of build their career and journey up to that point?
Yeah, I mean, I would say leave HR. And what I mean by that is take a temporary break from HR, get to know a business, become a general manager, become a district manager. And it might mean taking a step back, I was fortunate enough that, at ADP, I was given an opportunity to run a business, right? Run a large business unit. And so that was a great experience because, I had to manage the P&L and we had a finance team, I had to make sure we were doing the right things from an R&D perspective and that our sales organization was driving, the value that we were creating. And so I think it's super important to leave HR for a little while. Right. And I think that's I think it's a big mistake if you just kind of continue down that path. You start off as a recruiter and then you move over to comp. And, I would, again, leave HR. So that's number one. The second one is, again, being comfortable and having a plan. Right. If you really do want to be a CPO or be a head of HR, I think, if you're strong in compensation, take a chance and get to know what learning and talent and performance is. Right. Get to know recruiting. And so that's not an easy thing. But when you work for large organizations, like a Citigroup where I used to work or an ADP, you do have those opportunities. So take advantage of those. And I think the third thing is in any role that you're in HR is get to know the business, right? Like really, really get to know the business and do the work. And so I think those are three. They're not, I can't say they're pretty basic. But
they're not really though, right? They sound basic, but when if you're talking about getting to know the business, it sounds very generic. But you have to get out of your office, go and speak to people in the organization at different levels, spend the time out. That's a lot of time. It does take a lot. Some of the leaders I speak to in the first 6 months are like, Chris, I haven't been in my office. I haven't even seen my office in like a year. I've been on the road, traveling around the country, visiting manufacturing sites, visiting different plants, different regions, speaking to every single one of these individuals to get to know the business and then personally understand what motivates those leaders, et cetera, as well. And then they come back like you did. And based on all that experience, they present to the board and then it was ready to go, right? And same with the advice you gave in the beginning as well, the first one. I hear that all the time from a lot of the CHROs I speak to is they say, get out of HR, spend a few years working in supply chain, spend a few years working in, sales. And operations that have nothing to do with HR, and then come back, and then they come back and they're such a well-rounded individual at that point. And as a CHRO, they really understand the business. Not only understand it because they've read about it, they've lived it, they've breathed it. They've been in different organization parts of the business as well. So
I think you're right. And I think just in general, and I wouldn't say just for HR, is just make others better. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, in work, you know, we're so focused on making ourselves better and doing the best we can and being high achievers. But I think, at least in our culture, you know, you succeed if you make others better, right? If you help others. And if you put together, you know, even if it's a process, if you document a process, you're making others better, right? Because you're documenting something that's important. So I think that's super important, especially with a high-driven kind of environment that we all live in.
Yeah, amazing. Well, look, that leads us quite nicely onto our quick fire round. You probably know these questions by now because you listen to the podcast. We'll ask you five questions and you have no longer than 30 seconds to give us some amazing answers. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you ready? What was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a chief people officer?
You know, I would say it was just myself, right? Just time. You know, I knew I would be a chief HR officer one day, so it was just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. So your own development, building up.
You know, just kind of mastering, you know, making sure that if I was in recruiting, really mastering as best I could that part of my job, right? And then I would just say opportunities, right? I think it's just sometimes opportunities aren't there, but I always knew that I would be a CPO or CHRO, just a matter of time.
Amazing. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
Hey, that's a great question. I would say the best piece of advice is always being on stage. Right. You know, I always joke that, you know, so on my drive, I'm either listening to podcasts or listening to rap music, one of the two. Right. Mm-hmm. But when I get out of the car, I take a deep breath and I'm like, okay, game's on. So I have to be ready and have to be, you know, ready to engage with every associate every time.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. What's one book, or I should say multiple books, you'd recommend to our audience and why? Or podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. Except for this, aside from this one, you know, listen, I'm a big fan, as I mentioned, of the Watkins book. Mm-hmm. You know, any of Daniel Pink's books are incredible. Great. I mean, I think the Wen book is great. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the ones that come to mind. I'm also, you know, some of the spiritual books like the Seven Laws, you know, by Chopra, those are classics. So there's so many, man.
I'll link those ones in different.
Yeah.
Could you share some internet resources you use personally to stay up to date with current events, keep yourself educated, or stay productive?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn all the time, right? I think there's some really good content. And then, listen, if there's something that's troubling me or something I want to noodle through, you know, I do Google searches. You know, there's pretty much nothing I can't find or get some advice. True.
So, it should be answer to that question every time now. Just Google, Chris, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, YouTube. It really doesn't take very long, you know, to find anything that you need. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you use any apps on your phone to stay productive in terms of keeping yourself organized throughout the day?
Evernote's my go-to. I mean, I live
on Evernote too.
I love Evernote. Timetree is another great one that I use just to manage calendars, kids, mm-hmm. you know, work, you know, partner, all of it. You know, it's just great to Timetree as well.
Yeah. Fantastic. And then last question, you know, what's one thing about your business that you're most excited about?
Well, I mean, it's just the growth, right? I mean, there's few times that you get to be on in a situation where the growth is 25-30%, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just exciting, just to be a part of that. And I think just the second thing is we're giving people career opportunities, right? And just like, you know, going back to the story of my mom, there are 6,200 associates that get to feed their kids and get to enjoy life and be productive. And so I think that's what I'm most excited about. And then it'll be, like I said, 15,000, 20,000 in short order. And like I said, we get to give back a day in people's lives, which is mm-hmm. a big deal.
Henry, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. Guys, head over to hrdealers.com. As always, you'll find the show notes for the episode, everything we've been talking about, timestamps to all of the links, resources, everything will be linked there for you. So I thank you again. And before we part ways as well, also, where can we find more about the business? If people are interested in becoming a customer or learning more, working for you guys, what's the best way?
Yeah, I mean, just do a search of valleyliving.com. Won't be hard. V-A-L-E-T, living.com. Mm-hmm. There's tons of information. Obviously, Glassdoor, there's great information, and LinkedIn. So, yeah, you'll find many places and more. We have some big plans on doing some testimonials and videos of our associates and all the good work that they do.
Amazing. And in the podcast, what's it called again to remind everyone?
Yeah, it's called This Is Living Podcast. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to try to do this, the video thing here in short order. We actually have a district manager who's a videographer. So,
the talent already exists in the company.
Yeah, exactly. So come on in and just tell us how to do stuff. So, yeah.
Amazing. Well, look, thanks again. And I wish you all the best until we next speak.
Yeah, congratulations on the baby and congratulations on the podcast and all that you've done. Really, truly amazing. Good work.
Thanks a lot.